are the universe, so beautiful. Through all of the hurt, we'll stand invincible, so beautiful. We'll take on the world, we'll take on the world.
What's up, hysterical people? Today, we have Jeremy Stockdale from Why Lead, who's an expert on smashing the patriarchy, believe it or not. So, Jeremy, welcome to the podcast and tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're interested in allyship with women.
Thank you, Pamela. Well, first of all, thank you for that introduction, but thank you for inviting me as well. We literally met on LinkedIn. And I'm back on my post recently, and now here we are doing podcasts. So it's a wonderful thing. I mean, the short story is that I spent my first 27 years in a corporate career, and I thought I was one of the good guys. And then something happened about 3 years ago where I realized I just didn't know enough. And so as a result of that, I hadn't done enough to be an ally for women and to be a gender ally. And what happened very briefly was that there was a woman called Sarah Everard who was killed about 3 years ago. She was abducted, raped and murdered by a serving police officer. And it was a massive thing in the UK. And I was really horrified by what happened, but also by the way women reacted in the UK. It's like, well, we can never be safe. I mean, Sarah's doing all the things that she should be doing, which is she was on the phone, she was walking down a well-lit street after a night out with friends, and she had her keys in her hand, and it still wasn't enough. And I said to someone, what can I do to be a better male ally? And she recommended I read two books. And the two books were Everyday Sexism by Laura Bates and Invisible Women by Caroline Criado Perez. And I read those two books, and they changed my perspective completely, and then they subsequently changed my life. Now, it's not that I didn't know sexism existed, I didn't know there weren't data biases that are designed by men and for men. I had no idea of the scale, and I realize now that there's so much more I can do to help that. And hence, that's taken me on a journey over the last 3 years of educating myself, and now what I'm trying to do is share what I've learned with others. Hence the Wednesday posts on Wednesdays, we smash the patriarchy.
I love it. Well, Annette, it is how we met. I was one of the many people who got turned on to your posts on Wednesdays. And as I'm kind of trying to smash the patriarchy myself, it was so refreshing to see somebody with a man's picture, you know, actually saying these things and honestly educating me in some of these terms and tendencies that I didn't even know about. And I'm trying to do the work, be out there on the front line. So I do think it is about awareness. That's the first step. And that's one of the reasons why I invited you on this podcast, because I think your refreshing look on things and the fact that you've been doing some work over the last few years and now are educating other people about, especially men, but even women, need to realize that these things are happening and that it is societal pressures in all of our upbringing that kind of have us in this state. So nobody's fault, but we can, you know, be aware and do things to try to fix it and change it and make it better for women out there in the real world.
I mean, I started Wiley because my first career was spent working for Barclays. I had 27 years working for a bank. My passion wasn't really banking. It was leadership. I sort of stumbled into that like most people do as an accidental manager. But I was lucky after about 2.5 years of not being particularly good at it, I started to have more of an impact, and I just found it so rewarding. So when I left Barclays, the idea was I'd help other leaders lead with purpose and humanity and with a sense of why. Why do they lead? What is their purpose as a leader? Hence why I lead. So that's kind of where it started during the pandemic. We started training in 2021. And as my interest in gender equity grew from it, I've really now invested my time around creating gender equity because I think we had more female leaders. Point one, we need more female leaders, but also more leaders generally using both a combination of not just the masculine traits that seem to be so prevalent and over-indexed in leadership roles, but feminine leadership energies like vulnerability, like compassion, creativity, and generosity, and those things that are actually shown to have a better impact when it comes to how you lead people than the masculine traits. Not saying you don't need both, but we need to have more leaders that lead with feminine energies too. So I realized that actually by focusing on gender equity, it can hopefully help more leaders generally to have a better impact on the world. And that's in workplaces, that's in society, and actually in governments too one day. So yeah, that's what Why Lead is all about.
That's great. So first up, we wanted to talk a little bit about man-terrupting. So it's something that happens all the time. I even interrupt myself. But what does it mean to you, Jeremy, man-terrupting?
It's one of those things, I heard a term probably many years ago, I didn't really digest it. And when it really came to the fore for me, I read another book, actually, interestingly, called The Authority Gap by Mary Ann Seacart. What I love about the book, it shares lots and lots of data. Stuff is almost irrefutable. You cannot deny these things happen because it's got the data and research behind it. But one of the things it talks about is this idea of man-interrupting. The definition of a man-interruption is an unnecessary interruption of a woman by a man. And you might think, well, we all interrupt each other all the time. And of course we do. Everyone interrupts. It's the way we operate in this fast-paced world. We don't always listen particularly well, so we interrupt each other. But the research shows that men interrupt women 3 times more often than they interrupt other men. And particular research that I thought was really fascinating, quoted in the book, is that the US Supreme Court, they analysed transcripts of their court cases going back over many, many months. And what that showed is that the female justices, there's 3 of them to 6 men, but the female justices were 3 times more likely to be interrupted than the male justices. Now, bear in mind, would you really interrupt a US Supreme Court justice? Well, obviously, yes, but you're 3 times more likely to interrupt a female justice. And 96% of the time, the interruptions came from men. So it's kind of irrefutable. It's a thing. And so what I then did, I thought, well, I'm going to analyze this. I'm going to notice it. And I see it all the time. I listen to it on radio shows. I see it in everyday conversations. I see it socially. And the worst thing is, Pamela, I do it. And what I tend to do now is I'm conscious of my desire to interrupt, and I stop myself. And that has 2 impacts. Number one is I'm not being rude by interrupting someone's flow. But also, I hear stuff I wouldn't have heard otherwise. It's so much better for me. And it's interesting, when I've done something, whenever I talk about this with organisations, and I do it quite often, you always get the same reaction. The men, not people may not have heard the term, but the men go, well, I'm not sure that's a thing. And the women all go, oh, my God, it happens all the time. But what's really lovely is when people then take it away, and I've worked with quite a few clients where we do a session and we'll come back and review it. The men come back and say, I wasn't convinced by man interruptions. So I went away and tested it. Some test it socially, some test it in meetings, and they all come back and say broadly the same thing, which is something like, oh my God, we interrupt women all the time. I didn't realise. And so it's one of those things where it's a social construct that we've all grown up with, and women are more likely to interrupt other women than they are other men as well. So it's something that we all do. Once you're aware of it and you accept it's the reality, you can then start to change, and we can give more space to women to hear their views and to not interrupt them and take them more seriously. It would make the world a better place. And man-interruptions, I think, is a great starting point for some of these behaviours societally that are not gender equal or equitable.
I definitely agree. As a matter of fact, you were talking about the US Supreme Court. I just listened to the oral arguments on Tuesday of a case about abortion medication, and I totally heard that. It was the male justices were interrupting the female justices. It just happened a couple days ago, so it does still happen.
Once you're aware of it, you cannot stop seeing it.
Absolutely. It is something that you can now be aware of, and that will hopefully help to elicit change. The other one that's probably more famous, right? People all know the term mansplaining, right? Mm-hmm. Why don't you mansplain to me what mansplaining is, Jeremy?
I mean, there is a certain irony in me coming on and mansplaining to you, I must admit. Mansplaining is when, I know I'm mansplaining now, because I know you know the definition. When a man explains something to a woman in a condescending or patronising way, and particularly where she doesn't really feel like she needs it explained. She may not have asked to have it explained. She may even have more expertise than the man. That's what mansplaining is. And again, when I talk about this, you see women rolling their eyes and going, oh, God, yeah, all the time. I don't think men do it deliberately. I think men realize they're doing it. There's something, again, social construct that makes us do that. But again, when you're aware of it, you can just check yourself.
Do you think it's that men are trying to be helpful and like taking care of the woman to sort of rescue her? Is that part of it?
Sometimes, yeah. I think there's all kinds of, I mean, sometimes there's no question it is a power and dominance thing. And men from an earlier age are encouraged to demonstrate their power and dominance, whereas as from boys and women or girls as they are encouraged to be agreeable and compliant and not show off. And so that kind of creates that power dynamic that's inequitable. So sometimes it's that, because quite often I think you're absolutely right. It's men thinking, well, I need to take care. I need to look after her. I need to explain this to her. But then it all comes back again to what Mary Ann Seacart talks about in the book, The Authority Gap, which is because we don't take women as seriously. It's like we're quite surprised. Mary Ann tells she was on a LinkedIn Live recently where she was talking about her book and her recent TED Talk. And she was describing, she's had an extraordinarily stellar career. And she was, someone said to her, what do you do? And she was, it was an older gentleman, and she was explaining all the things she's done, UN ambassador, she'd been a political editor, a whole array of things, and I can't remember them all. More, she could pack in more in a week than I could pack into a lifetime. So she's a very, very talented individual. And at the end, this guy, when she described everything she'd done, he said to her, and this is verbatim, well, you're a very busy little girl, aren't you?
Oh.
And it's that kind of surprise, that kind of, how could you? But then also to diminish it with something quite so condescending. My view is, for the most part, that the people generally are inherently good and want to do the right thing. Yeah. So if they're not, it comes from a lack of awareness, a lack of understanding. Mansplaining is down to how we're brought up, and it continues into later life. And yeah, I think it mostly comes from a good place. Not always, but mostly comes from a good place. But it doesn't have a good impact.
It doesn't have a good impact. Yeah, I was giving them the benefit of the doubt, but you're right. I think once people are aware of it, it is a behavior that should change. And I want to
comment on, sorry, I was interrupting you. So there's a flow chart that was developed by someone called Kim Goodwin, and it wasn't her day job, but she's a designer and she's an expert in the field. And some colleagues of her came to her and quite sincerely said, how can I know I'm not mansplaining? Which I think it showed good intent. Sure. So she created a flowchart for them, which is available on the internet, and it just takes you through the guidelines. It's absolutely brilliant. So I would recommend that to people I work with. But it's there, it's available. Pim put it out there to the world, and I'm very grateful she did.
Absolutely. I will definitely link to that and the book recommendations that you've already shared in the notes for the show. So check those out for those that are listening. Well, let's move on to these are now, or a couple of these terms are new ones that you introduced to me. That in a way I kind of knew about them, but I didn't realize maybe the British version of the term. Mm. And that was heap-heating. I had suggested bro-appropriation. And you said, yes, another word is heap-heating or he-jacking, which I think is interesting. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what we're talking about now?
So I think the heap-heating is probably the more commonly heard in English, whereas the bro-appropriation is the US version, but it means the same thing. I mean, I first read about these in a really, again, another good book about male allyship, Good Guys. And it was written during the pandemic by a couple of men, actually, saying this is what male allies can do. Lots of good guidance in there. I took a lot from it myself. And they mentioned some of these terms. But heap-heating is when, or bro-appropriation, is when a woman says something in a meeting and it gets kind of ignored or glossed over. Then a few minutes later, a man says precisely the same thing or uses similar words, basically says the same thing, and everyone goes, oh, Jeremy, what a great idea. Yeah, we love that. Brilliant. And again, it's one of those things where when you talk about it, women's reaction, and this one creates a really visceral reaction. Frustrated to be interrupted and have things explained you don't need explaining, but something like this where someone takes credit for your ideas, you lose out in that moment, but I think it can impact people's confidence. And can also make them doubt themselves. Did I actually say that in the first place? Did I say it loudly enough? Did I say the right thing? So it has a double impact. And I think over time, it can have a really insidious impact on how women show up in the workplace. So heap-heating, I think, is something which, you know, with all the terms, we can have a bit of a laugh about. But it's something that I think has a massive impact, negative impact. I think in the Obama administration, it was recognised. And so what women did is they got together and they used amplification to make sure that when women said something, it wasn't given the credit it deserved. Others would come in and amplify and say, yeah, I just want to point out a great point that Pamela made there. And just, yeah, we ought to recognize that and listen to that a bit harder or whatever, just to amplify the point. And of course, that's not something that women have to do. Men can do that too. That's where allyship can come in. Recognize these things happening and call them out and give the person the floor space or the recognition they deserve for their ideas. Because a lot of these things intersect as well. If you're expecting to be interrupted, you might speak more quickly or less clearly because you want to get your point out quickly, and it may have less of an impact. So then later on, someone else will say the same thing in a much more calm, confident way, and they'll heap-heat you. So these things can have an impact, and over time, have a huge impact on, I think, women's careers and how they show up.
Yes, absolutely. I think that heap-heating, to your point, it's probably the worst one of the things that we're going to talk about today. And I think it also is the thing that can be more changed by leadership within the workplace or within whatever committee or group that you're looking at. So I think it's the leaders, to your point, they can basically, if they recognize it themselves, that's half the battle. But then if they recognize it, they can really reinforce the first person, in theory, a woman who had said the idea. And in a way, it's not completely calling out the bad behavior, but reinforcing the initial idea as opposed to the repeater idea. It's happened to me. The initial idea that I said was then carried on, and I felt like, well, great, my idea is being taken up as a thing that's going to happen, but somebody else is getting the kind of the credit in the room yes. afterwards. So like, do I speak up or, you know, if I'm just going to give somebody else the ability to get credit, you know, it does make the women second guess whether or not they want to participate. And so that's clearly a negative.
It's interesting, actually, the person that coined the phrase is an astrophysicist and she put it out on Twitter and it went viral. And when I wrote about repeating, I can't remember whether I tagged her or not, but I did somehow manage to, she connected and commented on it and said, it's a certain irony that the thing I'm most famous for is coining this phrase. Even though she's got an absolutely decorated genius and expert in her field, and this is what she feels she'd be known for. I said, well, you're leaving a lasting legacy in more way than one. There's more than most people are doing.
I will say that bro appropriation or heap eating has been around. You know, it's funny because I had a run-in with my older brother, and he's been the one my entire life who has mansplained things to me. And I accused him of mansplaining when it actually was appropriation or heap heating that he had done. And then I realized and I went back, you know, and I tried to correct myself. Actually, you didn't do this, you did that. And we were kind of having a laugh. But he remembered this TV show that was on here in the States when we were children. So a long time ago, The Wonder Bug, I think it was the name of the show. And basically it was a cast of four and they were all driving in this convertible car. But almost every episode, it was sort of a running joke. There was only one woman and three men. And the woman would always have a great idea. And then this one character would always bro-appropriate or heap-heat the idea. And then the other two men would go, oh, great idea, Joe, or whatever. And that happened every single episode. So when we were children, he had been exposed to that. But I don't know that he had ever internalized it as a thing that happened to real adults and women until I mentioned it as kind of complaining. So back in the 70s, they were making this TV show and that was a thing. I don't know who wrote that stuff, if it was a woman or a man, but it was true back then. And we still are fighting against it, especially now that more women are in the boardroom and in the higher positions.
I wasn't aware of that because, I mean, I knew it had been around. What is it? Actually Nicole Guglucci, who was the woman, make sure I give her the name credit because it wouldn't be kind of heat-heating.
But the phenomenon.
Yeah, but it was around in the 70s. I mean, and being recognized, whatever it's called, and made jokes about it.
Well, they made a joke about it. Yeah.
2024, and it's still a thing. It's still endemic. It's like, come on, we must be better than this.
Well, thank you to you, Jeremy, because you're going to help. It's too bad that it's going to take a man to help educate other men that this happens. You're acknowledging that it happens. You're acknowledging that you even sometimes do it and that you're changing and that you're seeing the benefits in the workplace from changing yourself and seeing other people change. And women, we need to change. We need to be more aware of it. We need to help our other fellow women. And we need to speak up, because it's the bottom line.
I totally agree with that. One of the fundamental things that I sort of rail against, really, is that there's two things. First of all, we have to acknowledge that we're all in this together. This will benefit all of us. We need to work together to create greater gender equity, because it will benefit us all. There's no question at all. I think the other thing that I particularly push back against is the idea that the way to solve this is to help women to be more confident, to speak up more. In other words, fix the women. You know, women do not need fixing. There's nothing wrong with women. It's the environment and these constructs that get in the way, and they clearly hold women back, but they also put undue pressure and create unhappiness for men as well. You've only got to look at things like men's mental health, male suicide rates, things like that. It's not a happy place for men either. So by working together to create a fairer, more equitable environment, one where we could all... we can show up and be ourselves, I think, is what we need to work towards. Now, some of that means that, of course, women do need some understanding of some of the things they can do that can help them to be heard best. There's an element of that I totally get. And by the same token, men need to understand the things they do that get in the way and new things they can learn that can make them more effective and build better relationships at work, but also in the home. You know, I always think partnership starts at home, and that's really where you should be starting. So not just at work as well.
Yes. All right. So there's some more fun terms we're gonna go through. So the next one, the mantles, the all male panels.
Yeah.
I love the term mantles. It doesn't happen quite as often anymore. I will say that there's the representation is getting more balanced, but I think it still happens. So, and the comment that I thought was hilarious is one of your readers commented that they were just in the audience, I guess. Yeah. They were a woman and it was about menopause. Like,
I know. It's joyful, isn't it? I mean, I have a feeling, I know, because I always find when I write these posts, the best thing about them is reading the comments, because I always learn so much from them. And it seems to attract now quite a diversity of views and opinions. For the most part, they're constructive and it's brilliant. But yeah, mammals. And it's one of those things where for all of my life, really, until the last year, I wouldn't have even thought of it or noticed it. Just wouldn't have done. One of the images I share is of a classic mammal when I talk about this. And I say, what does this represent? And they go, oh, it's a panel. And then you say, well, it's a particular type of panel. You've got six men, one of which is the interviewer. And this is at the World Economic Forum. I've got no doubt that all of them are experts in their field and have every right to be there. The question I ask is, do we really feel we can't find one person to represent 51% of the population that has a different mix of chromosomes? You know, really? There's not a single woman that could opine on whatever they're talking about. And yeah, the idea of four men talking about the menopause, and I have run sessions on the menopause, so I say it slightly hesitantly, and I've also talked about menstruation and menopause. But to give a perspective of the things I've learned and to try to engage more men in a topic that is, for me, these things shouldn't be taboo, but they are. And we should be able to create environments where people can get on with their lives and deal with things like that, but be supported so their careers don't suffer, they can keep flourishing. But yeah, all male panels, just say no.
Just say no. I love it. I will say this. I commend the idea that men were going to be talking about menopause and that there should be awareness. Like, there should be an awareness, but we also need to have a balance. That's great. Just say no. That's the best.
Yeah.
All right. Now we're getting into a few of the more funny ones, I guess you could call. Although maybe not funny if you're sitting on a crowded subway and you're trying to get to work and you've got man spreading.
Yeah.
People flanking you and just taking up extra space. So tell us about this phenomenon.
I think manspreading, most people have heard of it and most people will have seen it and experienced it. And it's not just women that experience it. But the reality is men generally have much bigger bodies. They take up more space. And I think there's not much we can do about that. But if you take up space anyway, and then you're taking up even more space, so much you're eating into someone else's space, that for me, that's quite confrontational is one word, but it's invasive actually. And I sometimes see that, and so what I tend to do now I'm aware of that, I make myself as small as possible. If I'm sitting next to anyone, particularly a woman on a public transport, because normally they make the seats a bit too small for normal sized people. So I will tend to sit on the edge and make sure that she has a bit of space, that I'm not crowding her. And when I sat down the other day myself on my transport next to a young guy, perfectly nice guy, and his legs were just spread right over my seat. And I just gave him a little nudge and said, do you mind if I just have my seat? And he went, oh, sorry, yeah, no problem. But he said, kind of easy for me to do in some ways because I'm a 6-foot male. Not always quite so easy, I think, if you're a woman, because you don't necessarily know what reaction you're going to get. You're going to get aggression. You're going to get something unpleasant. I had a lovely story, actually, from someone the other day, someone called Karis. And she was telling me how when she was little, she was on a public transport with her mum and they sat down and there was a man right in the middle. And he spread. He was really spread. Eventually, they sat. I think they might have sat next to him. He moved over to let them sit next to each other. But he was still spread out. And she said, in Swiss German, could he take up any more space? After a few beats, then the man turned across the daughter and turned to her mother and said in beautiful Swiss German, oh, "Where are you two traveling to today?" And they ended up having a lovely conversation. It was never mentioned, which I thought would be the only thing. If he'd apologised, that would have been nice. But anyway, they had a lovely conversation. Then he got off and they went about their day. And I guess I thought it was a lovely, funny story. Hopefully on the back of that, he may have thought, oh, I do that. Maybe I shouldn't. That's what I'm hoping anyway. Something about it is physical as well, isn't it? It's physically invasive as well as mentally. So, yeah.
Well, I don't know if you have a term for it, but, you know, we had a lot of news here in the United States over the last few years of like male politicians, like giving massages to women and, you know, stuff like that. That's sort of inappropriate, like older male. I mean, even Biden has whispered in a woman's ear and, you know, gotten.
Yeah. We've all seen those pictures and think, I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's cringy. It's cringy for sure. That I think that kind of falls into this man spreading, I would say. Yes. Just sort of invading other space.
I think men just taking up space generally, physical space and airspace when you're in meetings, you know, if you grab a seat and you know the women end up perhaps sitting outside of it, it just create space for people is what I'll be saying. Use your privilege when you have all that extra physicality. Just be aware of it. Don't crowd others. Just be more conscious of the space you take up and create space for others. That's just being a decent human being, really.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, because it's interesting, because what you were saying kind of sparked a thought. Please tell me if this offends you. Because, like, I always thought it was interesting, like, if you go to the movie theater and it's really not crowded, two men going together as friends will sit with a seat in between them, typically. I've noticed that.
Oh, interesting.
And I think it's a thing, not that I have personal experience, but, like, when men go into the bathroom, they often pick a urinal that's, like,
oh, yeah,
next to the next, next to the guy. Right? Yeah, certainly, if there's an open line, go over there. That makes sense. I mean, we do that in the stalls too for women. So men want space. Men notice when their space is crowded is my point. And so therefore, why aren't they doing a better job of
culture? I've never thought of that, Pamela. That's really interesting. I'm going to reflect on that. But I hadn't thought of that either. But of course we do. You know, we don't want to be crowded or, you know, people in our face either.
Go for it.
It comes down to awareness, doesn't it?
Next Smash the Patriarchy, you're going to talk about urinals. Woo! I love it.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah. But often what will happen is if your arms are sort of heavily populated, then we'll go into the cubicles, you know.
Sure, of course. Okay, so the last one is one that you didn't even officially define that I saw in your Smash the Patriarchy because you said it doesn't need definition. But manolog.
Yeah.
I think it's cute. I love the term manolog.
I do think the terms are quite funny. I'm very conscious, as you know, in some of the things I've written about recently, about what I don't want to do with them is this isn't designed to come across as anti-men. I'm a man. It would not be the right thing to do. I want to engage more men. But I also think that there is an element of a desire to be provocative to get the attention. Then you very quickly got to make it not something. You're not having a go at people. That is not what this is about. But I think a manolog is, and I didn't go into it in much detail, because I kind of ran out a bit of time on the post. I know some research that sits behind this. But basically, a manolog is when a man starts talking and doesn't stop. And I know, but I'm so conscious on this podcast, you ask me a question, think, am I manologuing, or am I just answering the question?
No,
but then sometimes those answers can go on for a long time, potentially. So the manolog is when a man starts talking and doesn't stop. The interesting research I've seen is that there is perceptions that exist. So there are definitely perceptions that men have, maybe women as well, but men have, that when a woman is talking, she's talking for far longer than she is in reality. And don't believe that we're talking for that long. And maybe it goes back a bit to that mansplaining and the belief that we ought to be heard and ought to be there to opine our views. But some of the research, again, I'm going to misquote it potentially, but something like, if you've got a third of women in the room, the men believe that it's more like 50-50. They believe that there was over half of the room had women in. And they also believe, even if the women took up a third of the airspace, they will believe they took up significantly more than half of the airspace in terms of talking and eating. So there's some real perceptions here, or misperceptions, about how long men speak versus how long women speak. And I guess with all of these unrelated equities, the reason to mention the manolog for me is just to be aware that when you are talking, you're not actually listening or learning. And so, yes, do share your views. If you're asked them in particular, if you're asked to explain something, explain it. But when you're talking, you're not learning. So create space for others rather than just bang on, at which point I'm definitely going to stop before I manolog.
You were doing great. But I totally resonate with that. And as a matter of fact, I think of all these things, I probably manolog the most. I feel like it's ADHD. I've sort of diagnosed myself as an adult. But it's something that I know that I do. And I have to, especially when I'm doing this podcast, I have to try to, you know, focus my thoughts and make sure that I'm getting just like my one point across and not like rambling on and on and on. And I think that's similar to manolog, but whether it's a societal, a gender bias, I do think in a way I have a lot of quote male tendencies being, you know, I was a salesperson, I'm more outgoing, or at least what women were supposed to be sort of taught to be, like demure, quiet, and you know, whatever. And I've never been that way. So I feel like they're male traits, but maybe not.
I think they potentially are. There's a couple of things you say there that's interesting. One is that with all these things, we all interrupt each other. And the reason for using the term manterruption is just because there's research that says it happens more frequently and has a more insidious impact when it comes to men interrupting women and women being interrupted generally. Same with mansplaining, same with heap eating. These are things that do seem to have a gendered bias towards them. But all these things happen to everyone. They happen to, I get interrupted, and we talked about it before we started. The other thing I think that's interesting is that, of course, we all have access to masculine traits and feminine traits. Maybe the masculine traits come more naturally to most men and the feminine traits come more naturally to most women, but we all have access to them. And of course, women can display overtly masculine traits as men can access their vulnerability and their compassion and all those more feminine traits. The problem is society tends to only reward masculine traits, and workplaces do. That's what we tend to kind of get, you know, excited about. And so it gets rewarded and promoted. The other interesting thing is that what research shows is that whereas men, if they show masculine traits like assertiveness and confidence and they speak up and they're logical, etc., they tend to get, you know, great, he's so assertive, isn't that brilliant? When women do, they can get punished because it's okay to be, you know it's important to be assertive and get your point across. You don't want to be too assertive because you might then be labelled as bossy.
Yeah.
It's important that you can, you know, make tough decisions and be decisive and with all of those, again, good masculine traits that leaders need. You don't want to be too tough because then you might be labelled a bitch. And I really hate that term, but it's gendered language that only, I've never heard a man ever call a bitch and I've never heard a man ever called bossy. They're more likely to be called tough-minded or, you know, there'll be positive spins put on those things. And so this is one of the tightropes that women walk because of these sort of societal constructs around gender. So it's great that you display these traits. All power to you. Do you get the recognition that you deserve for it is the question. You certainly should.
I mean, yes and no. I could go on. That's a whole nother episode, I think. I think what I've noticed for me as I'm now kind of a card-carrying feminist of whatever wave we're on now, I guess the fourth wave, I should mention that I'm not married. And I think that, I don't know, I feel like that gives me a little more of a freedom. I mean, maybe if I had the best husband, he wouldn't care what I did. But I found some of my female friends who are married, they either want to kind of hide their agreement with me from the husbands.
Yeah.
Because they feel like by buying into what I'm preaching these days is, you know, anti-man, and it's absolutely not.
No.
I mean, I'm just, you know, mostly just fighting for women to have bodily autonomy is my main thing. Yeah. But yeah, it'd be nice to be respected in the boardroom. So yeah, that's a bonus if we can just be listened to and acknowledged and respected. But yeah, I've definitely found it. I've lost a lot of friends just in the last few years because I'm, you know, whatever, I've become an activist. Mm. And women are even more, I feel, afraid to associate with me or like to let their husbands know that they agree with me. And I find that really sad. But it is what it is. You know, they're in happy marriages and, you know, I guess happy. I don't know.
I mean, this kind of work isn't done for popularity, and there's no question. And this is why, you know, I've experienced a bit of backlash in people, something I've written about, very, very minimal, but a little bit. And so it definitely takes resilience. It's a really important thing you need to have for doing this. But the reality is that the backlash I've had so far, and I'm likely to get in the future, will be nothing compared to what you and many, many other women that I've, you know, gotten to know and I've observed and I've worked with, that they experience by fighting this fight. And actually, I find it extra inspirational. I really need to get involved and help where I can and use my privilege to support that and, you know, and learn alongside it, because I don't have the lived experience. I don't have anything like the know-how of someone like you, but I'm learning and so keen to share what I am learning. But I think that what you just described is one of the sad things, that, you know, you've got these very powerful, intelligent women who are afraid to express themselves in front of their partners. And that's why I think this whole idea, if you want to be an ally, allyship has to start at home. If you don't understand some of the fundamental issues that impact women in the workplace, and including in your own home, then you've just not even got off first base. And I start off by saying, I used to think I was one of the good guys. The reality is they're good guys as well, but in that sort of blind kind of way, you know, they're inherently good. But just when you don't understand certain things, you cannot influence what you don't see. You know, if being a bystander does not make you a good guy. It just means you're not deliberately causing harm, but you're allowing it to continue. And that's part of my call to arms to other men, is we can make a real change, and it will benefit the women we love and the women we work with, but it will benefit us as well in all facets.
I think maybe what needs to be said is that you are not any less of a man for like acknowledging all of these things. Like you're still an awesome dude. You're not like losing your masculinity by acknowledging that women have important things to say. So I feel like that's part of it, that men are afraid, especially here in this country, we've got a lot of white men who are afraid of everything. And they're just afraid of not being on top anymore. And they're afraid of losing their white privilege, I guess, is the bottom line. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's happening all over the world. But I think with respect to simple things that we're talking about, just acknowledging women in their room and that they have important things to say and that they may need a little bit more space on the bench or whatever. It's pretty simple to do, I feel, and it will go a long way.
I'm very proud of my masculinity. I mean, there's no question at all. But I've also learned in the last 15 years, it just became, subsequently became more aware of it, but the benefits of embracing my femininity. When I was a leader in a large corporate, by embracing some of the feminine traits like compassion and vulnerability and curiosity and things that, you know, perhaps I wasn't taught, but I learned from others, particularly from the women I worked with, it made me a better leader. And I mean, maybe a better all-rounded person. It's really since I left the corporate world, I've really started to invest in this. I think I feel more masculine. I actually feel like I'm a more rounded man. I'm happier and more in tune with my emotions. It's still, I was 51 years flying blind, so I'm still a relative newbie. But it definitely feels more liberating now to be able to embrace my masculinity and not be constrained by it, but also recognize I can access all these wonderful feminine traits that just make me rounded and happier and more curious about the world and willing to learn. And I think that's part of it. And the trouble is, unless we can be loud about that and present a more positive image of what being a man is, because there are so many terrible role models out there. I mean, we won't talk about American politics, but it's the same in the UK. It's really hard to find positive male role models. And then, of course, you get some really bad actors that come along who take advantage of that. People like Andrew Tate, who say, listen, this is what a man's supposed to look like. Come with me, boys, and I'll show you how to be a man. And of course, it's the worst type of toxic masculinity. But I can see why it's attractive to some, because what else is there? You know? And so we have to find a way of presenting a more positive view of what being a man is in 2024. You know, not easy work.
No, you're doing it, though. You're doing great. But you mentioned that you got some backlash. It looked like most of the backlash that you got, or at least what I saw, was from women.
Yes.
Men are not reading your posts, or what does that mean? What do you think?
Well, it's both of those. So I've had this conversation. There's another, there's a man called Daniele Fiandarpa, who's been running an organization called Token Man for about 10 years. So he's been doing this for some time. And we've had a conversation about this because most of the people that engage with his posts are women. And he did a bit of analysis of mine because he's just interested. And he said, I think he said about 90%, 89% or something like that was women engagement. And I think about it, without an analysis myself, it feels about right. I have been getting more men engaged, and I've been definitely getting men who are coming onto my posts and approaching me, you know, DMing me as well, and talking about some of the things we discussed, and which is really positive. But yeah, it's roughly 90% women, 10% men. So a big challenge is for me, how do I get more men engaged around this? And then, yeah, the backlash from women, I think I can understand some of it. The one that got the most backlash when I wrote about menstruation, and it was one of those things where the point I was trying to say was that I don't think it should be a taboo topic. I think if a woman is really suffering with period pain, she shouldn't have to try and hide that and just soldier on. I mean, there were so many testimonials shared by women on my comments. One from a lawyer who said I had to drive 2 hours to stand in front of a judge when I wasn't really fit to drive, because I couldn't say I can't come. But she shouldn't have been there because of a normal bodily sort of function that takes place that actually helps us to repopulate the planet. So it's kind of important. It's pretty common as well. 800 million people at this moment in time are menstruating. So why is it a taboo? But it went off going all kinds of different directions. Women saying, I don't want to be talking to you about my cycle. And, you know, I think it's a bit creepy you wanting to talk about menstruation. It's like, you know, if you're so interested in it, write a thesis on it. It's like, no, I'm not saying any of those things. It's not what it's about. And so I think there was points where I thought it started to feel a little bit like a personal attack. However, it's great that it generates different thoughts. And what it made me realize is that you can't just blunder into these things and go, hello, I just want to talk about menstruation. I'm a man. It does need nuance and thought. And the fact is, the other thing is, you'll know as well as I did, Pamela, you cannot possibly please everyone. And if you've got a really clear sense of purpose, which I have around this, and your intent is good, you've got to cut through the things. I know you're going to annoy some people, and some people will attack you personally, and some people will doubt your intentions. That's okay. Doesn't mean I don't listen to them. I don't think, have they got a point there? It also doesn't mean I won't disagree with them. And I think some of the people that have come into my post, they just don't like me disagreeing with them.
Some people are really out to start a fight, really. It looks, yeah. And you've done a good job of just reinforcing your point. But I do think you encourage this type of dialogue. And I think that's just as refreshing as you starting the post to begin with. Yeah, hopefully more men will get turned on to the posts, yeah. And in general, the situations that, you know, we're trying to change and avoid. But I think just having women acknowledge that these things exist, and it helps us to realize that we're not alone, and, you know, that it's not just that guy who keeps doing it to me. It's a phenomenon that's happening in the society. Yeah,
it's exactly. That's a really good point, actually.
Yeah. Brilliant. Wow, Jeremy, this is so fantastic. I think we fixed all the problems of the world.
Yes.
One hour.
What should we do tomorrow?
What should we do tomorrow? This is fantastic. Thank you, Jeremy. This was so amazing and wonderful. I appreciate you sharing some of your wisdom with us today. And we hope that others will listen and hopefully make some change by speaking up or stopping the behavior themselves. So thank you so much.
No, thank you, Pamela. I've really enjoyed it. And I really appreciate you inviting me on today. Thank you.
Stay hysterical, everybody. We are the universe. So beautiful. We'll take on the world. 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 We'll take on the world.